Opening the Harp Chakra, the podcast, bringing you beautiful, healing, magical harp music, and talking to the artists that create it. I'm your host, Jay Michaels. Thank you for joining us. Today's guest is a harpist and a motivational speaker. She's president of the North Jersey chapter of the American Harp Society. She teaches music in the East Orange School District of New Jersey. She directs the harp program there. She also teaches privately. She's performed at many venues, including Carnegie Hall. She studied in Dublin, Ireland at the Royal Irish Academy. She also received many awards, including the NAACP Education Award. She's Robin Gordon-Cartier, and she's here with us today. Hi, Robin. Thank you for joining us.
Hi. I'm really glad to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, my pleasure. We spoke on the phone about a week ago, and it was just such a lovely conversation. I've been looking forward to this all week. Can we start at the beginning? How did you first come to play the harp?
Well, I grew up in a family where my parents believed that all of their children should play a musical instrument. In high school, my father played the drums and my mother played the flute, but they weren't professional musicians, but they just believed that that was part of what a child should do. So I started taking piano lessons with an aunt who lived down the street, and every Saturday I'd skip down the road, and that's where I would take lessons. And I think anyone who has ever taken lessons from a relative can agree that there's just a different type of pressure and leeway that they're allowed to take. Like if I didn't practice, she could keep me there all day and all that kind of stuff. And I really did not like it at all. And I wanted to quit. And I told my parents I wanted to quit. But my parents really weren't having it. It's like, you have to learn a musical instrument and you have to play it until you graduate high school. Is there something else you want to play? And so I came up with wanting to play the harp simply out of a nine-year-old's imagination. I had seen a harp on Lily Munster's, the Munster Show, and It didn't seem like she had to do that much. All she did was glissandos, and it was always full of spider webs and dirty. So that kind of appealed to the non-cleaning nature of my soul. And I also, though, we're talking now about the 60s, and I also felt like I'd never seen a harp anywhere but on the Munsters and in the Bible with David. And it seemed to me that the harp was going to be one of those things that I wouldn't be allowed to play. Because when I say it was the 60s, this was during the very turbulent times with Martin Luther King being killed and Kennedy being killed. And as a little kid, I felt like, wow, this might be one of the things that they don't allow people who look like me to do. Which would work in my favor because I want to play Barbie dolls and jacks. So I'm going to say I want to play the harp. And that's how that came to be. My parents asked me again and again, and I said yes, just like David in the Bible, because I was a little church baby. And a little church baby who told that big lie, right? Like David in the Bible, I think it's so pretty. And immediately, Jay, my piano lesson stopped. And my parents looked and looked for a harp teacher. It took them 6 months. And I thought that I had gotten totally off the hook. And then one day they took me to meet my new harp teacher. And she was my teacher for 20 years.
All right.
Yeah.
So you also went on to study at the Royal Irish Academy in Dublin, Ireland. How was that?
Well, and see, and this is how my teacher was able to make me really excited about playing the harp. The first 2 years, when I was 9 through 11, she asked my parents, could I go in the summer with her and her students to Vermont? So we went to Vermont and we studied the harp and we rode horses and we painted and we just lived for 8 weeks away from our families. And then when we started going to Ireland, I mean, my gosh, I was 13 because, well, I was 12, 11, 12, my parents didn't let me go. But the next year they did let me go. And for the next 8 summers, and I mean the entire summer, all of July and all of August, we went to Ireland with our harp teacher. We spent a couple of weeks at the Royal Irish Academy every year, learning all about crotchets and quavers and conducting children's choirs. And every day we had harp lessons with her. And then in the afternoons, we could go wherever we wanted to, which was amazing to a child like me who grew up where you didn't even touch that front door without permission. All we had to do was practice, and then we could go wherever we wanted to. So it was very appealing. Yeah.
There's a lot I want to talk to you about, but I'd love to hear some of your music. You have a CD called Just As I Am, and we have a piece here, He Looked Beyond My Faults. Can you tell us about this piece?
You know, He Looked Beyond My Faults is a church hymn written on the melody of Danny Boy. Mm-hmm. So for me, it really touches two big parts of who I am. As I said, I'm a church kid. My grandfather was a minister. And I also lived 8 years in the summer in Ireland, and it had a really huge effect on me. And Danny Boy was the song that my teacher chose for me to play as a solo when we had a play at a place. There were 500 cloistered nuns there. As kids, we didn't know what that meant, except for they told us that meant they never left the building. And so all of a sudden, we're in this big building, and you know, in Ireland, this old ancient building, and we're playing for this group of nuns, and she wanted me to play Danny Boy, which I knew was a piece from Ireland, Scotland. There's a big discussion on that, but I knew it was a piece they knew, and I was so nervous. But as I started playing with my little shaking hands, all of a sudden I could hear something in the background. I didn't know what it was. I thought it was my nerves really getting to me, but it turned out that all the nuns started humming and singing. And all of a sudden, I was so relaxed and so happy, because that was just what they would do at home in my church, is start singing whenever anybody started playing something they knew. So it turned out to be just a great memory. And that's why I wanted to put it on my CD. Thank you.
Set to the tune of Danny Boy, He Looked Beyond My Faults, from the CD Just As I Am, the music of today's guest, Robin Gordon Cartier. Robin, there's a conversation going on in America right now and really around the world. It's about racism. It's about cultural diversity. And I was wondering, as a person of color, can we talk about cultural diversity in, say, classical music and more specifically in the world of harp music?
Yeah, you know, it's at any point, it's both exhilaratingly hopeful and then devastatingly just horrible that we are still having these conversations. You know, I think that it's conversations we're going to always have because people have problems with anything that's different often. And this is anything. You've got blonde hair, I've got brown hair, you're black, I'm white, and on and on. And so it becomes, as a harpist in a field where there are more, I mean, well, let's go back to when I was growing up. When I was growing up, I never saw anyone who looked like me that played the harp. Now, while there were people there, I mean, Ann Hobson Pilot, African-American harpist who was 40 years with the Boston Symphony Orchestra, was surely there. But when I grew up, we didn't have computers. We didn't have iPhones. You didn't really know a whole lot worldwide what was going on. Now that we do, we as myself as an African-American harpist, I can't ignore and part of what I really want to do is help to bring music written by African-American composers, played by African-Americans to the forefront, more for people to see it. Oftentimes people think that Black people play jazz and hip hop and rap and that's it. But there were so many classical African-American composers. A group of six harpists and I have started an Instagram at Ananga Harp. Ananga is an African harp. Ananga is also a piece written for harp and string orchestra by a classical Black composer, William Grant Still. And so it's a name that resonates with us. And we really are trying to get music composed by African Americans, transcribed for the harp, written for the harp, and then played so that the diversity and the choices that students who look like me have can start to grow. And so that people can really start to hear, oh, we really are all the same. There's so much more. It gets to be heartbreaking that in orchestras across the country, the disparity in the racial divide is still very, very huge. And we know that only by children that I teach who look like me, only by them seeing people of color included in these groups, will they think that that's a place they can step into. And so it's a conversation, sometimes difficult, sometimes awkward, but it's a conversation we have to keep having because we really, essentially, the music is what can connect us and show that we're really all the same.
Yes. And all kinds of music, all kinds of people can play all different kinds of music, is what you're saying. It doesn't
Absolutely.
Have to be any one thing, right? The Ananga Group, can you spell that for us?
Sure. It's E, N as in Nancy, N again, A, N, G as in girl, A, Ananga.
And it's on Instagram. What we'll do is we'll include a link to that Instagram page, too, so people can find that and explore more of that.
Great. And I encourage anyone to go on. The conversations are really so incredible. And I'm an older person. So my colleagues had to drag me kicking and screaming to a venue such as Instagram. But it really isn't as it really is for times like these.
It is, because it does allow us to, like you said, get access to. Because even with the internet, if you go and just search for harp players, you're not going to see a lot of people of color right away unless you really start looking. Once you do, you go, oh, yeah. It's the same with classical music. That's why the discussions are going on now, that we need to not only reach out and include more, but we need to, like you said, get on Instagram, get on Facebook, get everywhere so people can see.
You know, and Jay, we absolutely have to have these conversations. And on the Instagram, what we did was we each took a week introducing ourselves. And I shared a story in my introductions of that I've never really even told out loud. The short end of it is, as a young Black child, I guess I was around 11, 12, and playing at one of the master classes. And after I finished, and you go to master classes, you don't usually take your harp because we all use the harp that's there. And after I finished playing my piece, the mother of the child after me ran up and wiped the strings down. And I just, it was mind blowing, but it's something I never speak of. And to speak of it is to help people understand things happen. And I mean, bad things happen to everyone. It's not that we stay there, but for people to understand that we have got to talk about it so we can be careful not to really just devastate any young student's life, you know, even by saying something like, you know, your hair's too curly, or, you know, all the different conversations that we know are going on now. They're important.
And I believe it's up to all of us to learn to be more inclusive, to learn to not say things that are offensive, even though I think some people make the mistake of, well, they've heard a term growing up and they don't realize. But once you realize, then you got to change. You got to adapt. You've got to, you know, show that respect. You know?
Absolutely. When you know, you've got to change, and you've got to speak on it. You've got to change, and you can tell people around you. And I think in a lot of ways, the world is getting, it's interesting that we can be getting so much better and so much worse at the same time. But I do believe the better is going to way outrule the worst. I really do.
It's an uphill, but we just keep moving.
We keep moving. Yes.
Thank you for talking about this with me. I appreciate it. Can we hear some more music? You have a song called The Nightingale.
Oh, this is one of my favorite pieces. It's written by Deborah Hanson Conant. And it just is just a beautiful piece that when she plays it, she sings. I'm not a singer, and I'm very appreciative that her music is written where if you sing, you can sing. If not, you can play it solo. And it's just a piece that is near and dear to me. I was blessed to do a mentorship with Deborah, and it's just an opening. It's just an opening. And so I'm glad you're including it. Thank you.
And that is The Nightingale by Robin Gordon Cartier, a piece written by Deborah Henson Conant, or DHC as we often call her. She was on the podcast a few episodes ago, and she's just a wonderful, wonderful person and a great person to study under and work with.
She's one of those believers in anything is possible and to just go ahead and do it. And for somebody who was classically trained very strictly, it is a very good way to begin in finding my own voice in this thing called music.
So you're actually helping adults find their voice as they learn to play the harp. One of your passions is teaching adult harpists. Can you tell us a little bit about that? What are some of the challenges?
I love it. Beginning in the Middle was a conference that went on for about 15 years, and it was all about people who start playing the harp in the middle of their life. They come with many benefits. People who start playing in the middle of their life, they come by choice. They normally are now ready to purchase an instrument. Like, they're ready to go. They're going to buy their instrument. They're going to buy their music, and they are just ready to go. And then there are the realities that set in with what happens when you're an older person who might have a little bit of arthritis in your hands, who might have a little bit of trouble with your eyes and seeing the music and seeing the strings. And my joy is working with adults from every type of situation, because I believe that everyone can indeed play the harp in a way that will give them satisfaction. I think I told you when we had our conversation about how oftentimes when I'm teaching my adult students, I won't watch them first. When we start our lesson and they say, oh, I've practiced really hard this week, I ask them to play for me what they practice, and I don't look at them. Because sometimes, simply because our hands and our bodies are no longer, you know, 10 years old and able to do anything, we might not look like a harpist. We might not be able to bring our fingers all the way in into perfect closing positions. We might be kind of leaning on the harp a little differently. We might sit with our legs sideways instead of with the harp in between. And I like to hear what they have first, because if it sounds beautiful, isn't that what we dream of? Isn't that what we want? And so I enjoy working with adults to find their way through different things. I also enjoy that a lot of the adults are coming to the harp because they want to do work in healing harp, playing in the hospitals and playing for hospices and things like that. And I think we can't have enough of that. It's really good that now it's being recognized by colleges and there is training for things like that. So I really enjoy helping them fulfill that because it helps the world.
Absolutely. I do a lot of episodes about healing harp. I just think it's an important thing. Music therapy in general, but specifically something about the harp. It's good that you're helping so many people to move in that direction, because the world needs all the healing it can get. We all do.
Yeah. And it's just so much fun to me because I didn't come to the harp with this love and desire to want to play the harp. And in fact, it was adults that made me realize, wait a minute, this thing I do is kind of cool. Mm-hmm. Because when I did my first Beginning in the Middle, and I saw all these people bringing in, I mean, beautiful harps, big harps, small harps, and there was just so much joy that I realized, whoa, wait a minute. I mean, I was just kind of acting like a blue collar harpist. I get my lunchbox and I go to work and then I'm done, because I grew up as a working harpist. And all of a sudden, I started looking at it through different eyes and realizing what a blessing it was to have had parents who made you do something. And it turned out to be really your life.
So you were the inspiration for a book, Robin, the Girl Who Wouldn't Practice.
This was right. One of my adults. I met this lady, Dr. Dorothy Carey, who wrote this book when she was 86. And she was at one of my workshops and she asked about, you know, how I started playing the harp. And I told her what I've told you guys, that I didn't really want to. I just wanted to be a kid and just play games. And she just thought it was a really cool story. And so we worked on this book together and she self-published it. And there you have it. And it really, I love it because a lot of people call me and they say, you know, my child didn't want to practice. And just reading your story and then being able to call you or to do a Zoom with you and let them see all the things you do, they really get inspired to practice. Because remember, I was a kid who didn't want to practice, but I was a kid who did practice because when I grew up, you did what your parents told you.
Yeah.
You know? And especially once I knew, I mean, my parents sacrificed everything to send, I have two brothers, to send us away all during the summer for opportunities. And so the one thing I wasn't going to do is not do my part. So in the summers, I practice at least 8 hours a day because we'd practice before lunch and then we'd be able to go do things and then we'd practice at night. And I was serious about my practice. So while I started out being a girl who didn't want to practice, I certainly practiced. And I tell you, Jay, the practicing I did as a child is really what I'm living off of now. Because as we talked about, as you get older, different challenges, physical challenges can come into your life. And my foundation is so huge that I'm able to live off of that foundation, even when my body doesn't want to cooperate.
That's brilliant. You put in the work, you put in the effort, like in many things, and then you benefit from it in the future.
Oh, when you see that all throughout music, I think music is one of the places where you see people being able to do it. I mean, almost until they leave this planet, you see them able to continue to perform because that part of your body takes over.
It does.
I went to the mentorship with Deborah because I wanted to learn more about playing the lever harp. I grew up as a pedal harpist and I wanted to get more facility and even more imagination playing on the lever harp in case I can't use my feet anymore. And so it's almost the gift that keeps on giving. I'm very fortunate in my life.
And it's so good to be open. No matter how long you studied, how long you've played, to be open to learning new things because it just opens up new roads, new pathways.
We all need motivation. We need to be motivated and we need to, you know, seek out. I don't understand what people and I have to tell you, I got some flack from my colleagues. They're like, why are you in a mentorship? Aren't you already done? Like, what are you doing? And I just really believe that, like you say, if you do not continue to look for opportunities, my husband was one who was always pushing me forward because I was that shy girl who really didn't openly talk to people. And he would push me forward and be like, you've got to say something. You've got to stop being shy. And I realized that being shy doesn't do anything for your life. It really makes your life very limited. And so you have to open your mouth. And so now I spend a whole lot of my life opening my mouth and trying to convince other people to open my mouth. Sometimes when I'm doing a conference, I send the people I'm teaching, I might say if you're in my workshop, I'll say, okay, Jay, go outside the room and I want you to come back in this room, introduce yourself and play a song. Like if I'm doing something on anxiety or stage fright. And my husband was outside of one of my rooms and he said, this man came outside and he was looking like he was about to have a heart attack. And my husband was like, are you okay? What's wrong? I think my husband thought maybe he was going to the bathroom or something. And the guy said to my husband, your wife is making me play in front of everybody, and I don't know how I'm going to do it.
Oh,
and my husband was just laughing because he's like, yeah. Man, just do what she tells you. Yeah,
that's right.
I promise you it'll be painless because sometimes we just need somebody to push us.
When you have that opportunity, when someone pushes you, it means someone cares about you. So take advantage of that and move forward. Absolutely.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Can we listen to one more piece of your music?
Yeah, I would love to. I'd love to. This next piece, What a Friend We Have in Jesus. I love this hymn. Frank Foltz does so many beautiful arrangements of hymns. And oftentimes I'll play someone's music and it just resonates so much with me. And this resonates with me because I'm that little Baptist girl. And in our church, you know, we have drums, we have instruments, there's dancing, there's noise. And so I really love this arrangement because it goes from starting out just kind of like a sweet little piece into a kind of bluesy jazz situation. And it just makes me smile. I hope it makes you guys smile too. Thank you.
That is so cool. What a friend we have in Jesus. You know, I'm smiling now. That is wonderful. That is Robin Gordon Cartier, and from her CD, Just As I Am. Thank you so much for being on the podcast today, Robin. This has been so much fun.
It really has been, and I've enjoyed watching your other podcasts. So to be included now, I'm really excited.
Oh, thank you. Well, we're going to include links to your website and to your Instagram, Facebook, if you want.
Yes. Yep.
Do you have a YouTube as well?
You know, I do not, but I will tell you, if you type my name, a lot of YouTubes are there. just type in my name and, you know, there's a lot of recordings, especially now that we've been dealing with the pandemic. So please,
right.
There are some Music 101, 102 from Somerset. There's harp gathering workshops. There's concerts. Please, and feel free to reach out to me in any way. I am here and available.
Well, thank you for talking to me about all the things we talked about. It was an important talk, and I'm so glad you were on. Very appreciative of the good work you do in the world. So thank you for doing that.
Great. Thank you so much for having me here. It's a great podcast.
Thank you. If you have questions, guest suggestions, please email me, openingtheharpchakra@yahoo.com. We've also included links to PayPal and Venmo if you'd like to contribute to the production of this podcast. Please subscribe, please share, please tell your friends. And in the coming weeks, we have more beautiful, healing harp music from around the world. I'm Jay Michaels. Thank you so much. Peace. Namaste.